Hello, Sales Change listeners. This is episode 15. This episode features Anthony Villis from First Wealth. He's also the host of the First Wealth podcast. First Wealth are lifestyle financial planners who don't believe in like the stuffy grey suits that you see everywhere. They take a fresh approach. They're youthful, entrepreneurial, and they like to build a client relationship, caring what's important to their client before coaching them how to get to their goal. This episode covers their story, their team, their vision, and a little bit of COVID-19 chat. Thank you for taking the time to listen, engage, reach out, and be included in the Sales Change community. It's really important to me. Why not go and visit the website, www.saleschange.co.uk. Sign up to the Sales Change snippet. It's in your inbox every Monday, 9:45. Also, whilst you're here, why don't you go on Instagram, look at Sales Change, and drop us a follow. Hope you enjoy the episode. Anthony, welcome to the Sales Change podcast, episode 15. How are you?
Very well, sir. How are you doing?
I'm all right. It's very hot in this office. I'm in this office all by myself, and I've had to shut the windows because there's trucks going past, but this is the joys of working outside of a studio.
Well, be grateful that it's not a packed office with loads of other hot people in there. Well,
yeah, that's what I am. Yeah. So you work for First Wealth?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. We set it up 10 years ago, so we're 10 years into our journey, which is good.
How's it going?
It's good. Yeah, we're doing all right. Obviously, business the last few months have taken a bit of a turn from what we were originally planning, but I'm enjoying it. It's a challenge, an opportunity to do some things we probably didn't think we were going to be doing. And yeah, business is good. Thank you.
So what does First Wealth do?
So we are a financial planning firm, I guess, is the way we describe it. We work with individuals, mainly entrepreneurs, business owners, professionals. We're based in London, but I live in Dorset, as you know. We do three things. We work with clients to help them to define what they want out of their life. So not just about making as much money as possible, but where they want to live, how they want to spend their time, you know, what are their hobbies, what are their passions in life. So we build a plan to get them to where they want to be. We then do our wealth management. So we have an evidence-based, academic-based research investment process we use for clients. And then the third thing we do is financial coaching. So probably the biggest challenge of our job is making clients, helping them to make consistently good financial decisions, because we're all hardwired to screw things up financially. So it's stopping people from making bad financial decisions and helping them make good ones.
Like buying a drone.
Buying a drone, that's something. Or selling out of the stock market at the wrong time, or going and buying a Lamborghini. Those sorts of crazy things that aren't going to do anyone long-term good.
So what was the vision when you first started First Wealth?
We wanted to just build, you know, we wanted to build a really forward-thinking financial planning firm. So we come from an environment that historically is a very much a sales-based culture. So here's a client, sell them a product, move on, earn a commission. That, it was very much a sales role.
Yeah.
Financial planning actually has evolved massively over the last sort of 5 to 10 years, and it's much more about those softer bits. So what are people really wanting out of their lives? What do they not want to be doing? What's that coaching side of it? Trying to draw that from people. So much more about decent questions and listening, and then building the plan. So that's how coaching and sort of financial planning has evolved. So we wanted to be at the forefront of that, sort of the vanguard, and go, right, this is the direction of travel here. Can we build a financial planning business that takes into account all of the stuff that's evolving, and actually to lead a lot of that evolution as well? So it's an exciting place to be at the moment. And the profession has changed dramatically, particularly over the last 5 years.
So as a financial services, you say it's changed in regards to how your relationship with your clients. Because I always picture financial services as sitting in a room with a stuffy guy in a suit, and they're telling me, this is what you should do, this is, and using their evidence and their knowledge to make the right decisions. But you're saying that you coach your clients.
Much more about the coaching side. Yeah, absolutely. So, and it's a bit of an evolution, really, in terms of being an advisor and being a coach are very different skill sets. And it's quite a difficult thing to get your head around to start with. So as an advisor, you are used to giving people solutions. So, right, here's a client, what's the problem? Right, let's solve it. With a coaching facility, it's much more about, there might not be a problem. It's kind of, right, how are you? What's going on in your life? What are the things that matter to you? What are the things that bother you? What's on your mind? Where do you want to be? What are you going to regret if you don't do? And you sort of draw and you help the client to create their own story. But not directing them by listening and asking questions. Once you've got that out of them, then you become the advisor and go, right, we're now going to solve this to some extent, but we're trying to create a plan that's the client's plan, so they own it. It's all about them and putting them in the middle of it. And the kind of the money bit comes second. It's kind of, well, if we need to buy some investments or do some pensions, all that fits into a plan, but it's a very much a secondary consideration after the sort of the fun bit of engaging with the client's life.
So it's all about the relationship that you're building.
Correct. Yeah. It's completely different. I mean, I would say now I feel more like a coach than a financial advisor. And yeah. In a weird way, it's a much more satisfying place to be as a business owner and someone who's trying to grow a financial planning business.
So do you do that with individuals or businesses as well?
It's mainly with individuals, but a lot of those individuals are business owners. So a lot of them are entrepreneurs, people have set up businesses, medium-sized, you know, small business, SME sort of businesses. And often they're in the accumulation stage. So typical client working 100 miles an hour, often got family, maybe not spending as much time with their family as they want to. Their hobbies and things they're interested in are getting put to one side to some extent while they work hard. So it's kind of a, can we address some of those things now? Or what's the end game with this? What are we trying to work towards here? Because for most clients, most clients understand it's not just about making as much money as possible. Most people want quality of life. And obviously that life can be completely different for every client we have. But it's really, what are we looking to achieve? And what are the things that make you happy? What's your purpose? And let's focus on that as we work together.
So how many people work for you, Anthony?
15 people in our business.
And how have you gone about building that team? Because I'm assuming that it was just you at the start. Or did you have a couple of people that came with you and then...
Rob Kaplan is my business partner. So we set up with him and Zoe was working with Rob as well. So it was three of us from day one. And we've just sort of gradually, I've taken a couple of people, Claire, who I used to work with in a previous business, who was a sort of director of the business. But we're very much now about growing a culture of proper financial planning where we actually have fun. We have a bit of a laugh. We're really good at what we do. We don't take ourselves too seriously. We challenge the status quo of financial planning and go, look, the point you made earlier on, we don't need to be grey-haired and stuffy suits and we don't need to sell products. We can actually be pretty chilled out. We can be young. We can be vibrant. We can be very good at what we do. And we're the financial planners for people who might feel and look a bit like you. But we don't get old school money. If you've got the sort of the trust fund money, if we want to bank with Coutts or UBS, we don't get that sort of client, but we get entrepreneur, self-made clients, and it's a different marketplace. So to go back to the answer to the question, I mean, because we've built this brand now, I think we don't use recruitment consultants. We use social media, big on LinkedIn. We get probably two or three CVs a week from different people, just sending them direct, saying, look, I've seen what you're doing, really like it. Are you looking for people? So we're building a business of people who are being drawn towards us as employees rather than going looking for people, which is a bit of a game changer to do that.
I think from my perspective, there's always this on the internet, if you search for corporate culture and understanding how corporate culture works, there's these seven pillars of corporate culture and everybody knows these seven pillars, but I work on a basis of four. And the people that you bring in are the base, because they're ultimately how you shape your business, so the people around that. Then you've got your purpose, and you've clearly defined your purpose, saying that you want to be this the brand image for you is this young entrepreneurial, we want to help these business owners and business leaders and wealthy individuals achieve what their purpose in life is. And then you've got the processes and on top of that, but it all is encapsulated by the leadership. So it's clearly communicated and sort of given out to the team in the way that they do it. How would you describe yourself as the leader?
I am massively ambitious. I'm very impatient. I'm very open-minded in terms of what we're trying to do as a company. I sort of will take and look at anything. I'd say I'm pretty colourful in terms of the way I am. I'm energetic, but I think we're on a bit of a, you know, we use the word mission, we're on a bit of a thing. We see an opportunity to grow. A financial planning in the UK is evolving anyway. So it's becoming a really cool profession. It's totally different from what it was 5 or 10 years ago. The people doing it, the quality of the work they're doing is changing. So that is something that's happening. So we sort of see ourselves, right, there's a bubble here. We're in this bubble of something that's getting better. And we want to ride that bubble and we want to be at the vanguard, at the forefront of that bubble. We have a great opportunity to do something here. It's a kind of the right place at the right time.
And how do you see yourself as a leader? Because you said you're quite outspoken. You're quite, you didn't say outspoken, but you're quite out there. So would you describe yourself as quite visionary? Because you've identified this, let's say, this change in fortunes for the financial services industry. Would you say that you're quite visionary, and are you able to communicate that to your team quite easily?
I don't know if I'm a visionary. I don't know. It sounds quite grand to say you're a visionary.
It does, yeah.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, I think I'm just someone who looks at what we do. I'm this sort of classic guy who goes, I'm not going to change the world, but I can look at my business and go, there's 100 things we can do better. And if we do all of those things better, then we'll get that 100 done, and then we'll have another go at the next 100. And by the end of that, we will end up with probably quite a good business. And yeah, I think people are, we've got good people, right? So I think people are taken, hopefully, by our passion is not put on. It's clear what we're trying to do. It's very much the clients get a great outcome, get a lot of amazing customer feedback. And that's kind of the energy that comes in. So someone doing the job, getting an email or some sort of review from their client or a referral going, like, you guys have changed my life, or you've completely seen a different aspect on what we're doing. That is the fuel that gets us going. It's an unbelievably exciting thing to be doing now. So our mission to do great things for clients gives us the energy to take this thing on to the next level.
Yeah. So is that success come from word of mouth, or has it come from, like you said before, the social media side? Is it a different way of marketing yourself, do you think?
Yeah, so I think there's three ways that we sort of get business, really. The first two are very traditional. So client referrals. So it's that, you know, do a great job and then just don't be shy to actually ask for a referral. You know, if you've done a good job, you're happy, please pass us on. So that's very old school, but it works. The other one that we get a lot of success for is professional networking. So we've got a lot of lawyers and accountants, and our strategy always there is to try to work with those accountants and lawyers as private clients. If we can sign those guys up as individuals, and they sort of then talk about our business, and they are the sort of gatekeeper to their clients who are in a similar position. So that's always worked very well for us. And then the third part is around the social media, the website, the channels we're involved in, right? Content production. It's trying to balance factually relevant stuff that's interesting and engaging, but with some sort of fun and some humor and some maybe slightly lighthearted, so that we're not for everyone, right? And that's the other thing. One of the big things I've learned is you can't please everyone. So if you're gonna win, you need to please 10% or 5% extremely well, and you've got a great business. If you try to please everyone, I talk about being Magnolia, you just end up watering out your own personality. You end up with nothing, and you look exactly the same as everyone else. So don't be frightened to do things differently, because you're not there to please everyone.
I think you have to try much harder if you're Magnolia, as you say it, because you've got to, the efforts that you've got to put in to grab that business is massively bigger than if you were completely different. Let's take, I don't know, Gary Vee, for example. Gary Vee works in the media and the marketing sphere, but because he's outspoken and because he creates this persona around himself and he's got these multiple media channels, everybody will flock to him rather than anybody else who's saying the same message, but in a slightly less flamboyant way.
Yeah, that's right. And I think a lot of this comes with two things. One is confidence, and the other one is authenticity as well. And I think for years, I know looking at my own situation, probably true of others, that I'm working in this thing that's the grey hair, the stuffy suits. And you know what? I'm not a stuffy suit kind of guy. I'm actually quite a creative guy. I like to go to work in a t-shirt, and I'm pretty relaxed about it. That's who I am. But for 20 years, I was frightened to be the real Anthony Villis, because, like, what will people think? And you can't have a financial advisor that doesn't wear a shirt and tie. And, you know, maybe they say something that's funny on social media. So you've got to grow that confidence to go, actually, we've got to the stage where we've got a really good business, and people are drawn to the fact that we're doing things differently rather than the fact we're trying to do things, everything the same. So that sort of step out of what people expect you to look like and go, actually, this is just actually who we are. You'll end up attracting clients that are like you. And you know what? There's a lot out there who are like you. It sounds like such an obvious thing to say looking back on it, but it took a long time for me to get to that stage of realization.
There are 68 million people in this country. If you can't find a niche of, let's say, 10,000 people that actually fit and understand your ideas, you're doing something wrong. But you've got to put that message out there.
Correct. Absolutely. So that's that thing of realization, and then once you realize it, about confidence to execute and say, right, I've now realized this is what we've got to do. How are we going to get that message out there? What's the best way to talk to our potential clients?
What was the change for you? Because you started First Wealth 10 years ago. What was the change for you? Did you have a sudden confidence shift, or was it just I'm going to just do this?
We kind of had a few sort of false starts, really. We set the business up and we were like, right, we're going to do everything new and it's going to be fresh. And we kind of reverted to type by mistake, really. It was sort of 2009 when we set up. We had the Euro crisis of 2012 and we sort of went back to being an investment manager, talking about money all the time and forgetting to talk about the client's life. And it was kind of like Groundhog Day. So every client would come in and go, you know, what do you think is going to happen to the Euro? And what do you think about what's going to happen to Greece? And I said to Rob, I said, I can't do this anymore. I actually am bored senseless of giving an opinion on something I have no control over. And it's just guesswork.
Yeah.
So we sort of got to the stage 2012, 13. We thought, all right, are we going to continue with this or are we going to have another go? And we have found a way of doing stuff around engaging within a better way of clients, talking to them in a better way, having a better conversation, much more into this coaching. So we committed to the coaching side of the business. And we sort of went into it with a bit of fear. It's like, well, what are clients going to think about it? But the response was brilliant. Clients loved it because it was a different conversation. And again, that talked about energy. Authentic, fun from a client's perspective, also fun from our perspective. We actually enjoy having a conversation. So rather than, oh my God, I can't do this anymore, to I've just found out more about that client in the last hour than I have done in the last 5 years of knowing them. And it just becomes a more enjoyable, fulfilling job. So that gives you that boost. So that was a bit of a sea change sort of 4, 5, 6 years ago, where we went from I can't do this anymore to this is a new way that clearly works that we can build on.
Have you seen an uptake in business because of the COVID-19 situation?
It is quite quiet at the moment from a sort of new business perspective. So I guess there's two things going on. One is we are kind of all hands on deck looking after our existing clients. So there's a lot about people are invested, there was particularly back in March, early May, markets were all over the place. There was a lot of fear going on. So it was about hand-holding clients, phoning clients, talking to them about what's going on, making sure they're not making any bad decisions around selling out or wanting to liquidate assets, etc. So that was probably the first month or so of the business. Things have settled down a little bit more. But I guess from the second part of it, it was the sort of target market that we're after in terms of clients. Most of those people running businesses were probably firefighting their own business issues. So probably were the last thing they were thinking, I must get some financial planning advice. They're probably thinking, right, how the hell do we get through the next 6 months of cash flow? And I think we've seen the last couple of weeks, things have just started to tick up a little bit again, where people have gone, right, this is now a new normal or the new normal. So we need to get some financial advice. We're going to be like this for the next 6 to 9 months, potentially. Now feels a good time to be talking to someone.
There seems to be a period of stasis at the moment where nothing's going up, nothing's going down. We're just bibbling along, if to coin a phrase. There's too much uncertainty to make a push, and there's not enough certainty to sort of hold back. Does that make sense?
I agree. I mean, my view on this is to basically, from the start, was to go, right, we're going to push forward into this, basically, to take it head on and go, right, rather than sit on our hands and go, right, what's going to happen, to go, let's just keep going with this. So going into the marketing, let's spend on marketing, let's increase what we're doing there, let's continue to evolve the business in terms of the technology investments we need to make, let's promote the staff who are deserving of what they've done. So to go, look, to be open with the team and go, look, clearly, we can all have to make some sacrifices in the short term, but we're not going to just sit around and do nothing. We want to push this business forward so that whatever happens when we're through it, and even on the process of being through it, we're going to be a better business than we were when we went into it.
Is that where your podcast idea came from, to boost the marketing, or was that happening before?
No, it was exactly that. It was a sort of couple of things, really. We wanted to build, we've talked about building a first wealth community for a long time. And it's basically the clients that we have. We've got lots of amazing business owners and, say, entrepreneurs and professionals who have got incredibly varied experience. So it was always like, right, can we use that experience to help out some of our other clients to say, right, how do we do it? So we kind of tried to do some sort of physical events where we get people in a room and networking. And I think the problem is that most of our clients are just flat out busy. So it was quite difficult to get that. So the obvious thing to do then, go, right, why don't we look at an online presence? So either a podcast or a webinar. So we can actually interview clients about marketing or about PR or about accountancy or whatever those things are. And those lessons or webinars are a sort of evergreen content where people can just duck into it at any stage. And obviously it's available to the wider world as well, not just the community. So yeah, we started it in lockdown.
And how's it going?
I actually, do you know what? I absolutely love it. I think it's my real calling in life is to be some sort of radio DJ or something like that. So I'm a talker. I talk to people all day of my life with clients. I listen to them, I talk to them.
Yeah.
So whether it's an existing client or whether it's someone I don't know very well, I like speaking to people. I'm interested in people. So I've really enjoyed doing it, probably more so than I imagined I would do.
Have you missed that real connection then because of lockdown? Because if you're sat in an office or not in an office, but if you're sat in meetings, talking to people, making these new relationships, because that's something that I've found is actually hearing real laughter and seeing facial expressions and having that body language and being able to bounce off somebody in a real sort of building a relationship way, that networking, that's what I've really missed from a business perspective.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the thing that's hard particularly for the team is just there's an energy when you get people together in a room. You know, there's a sort of, it's just there. And although you can do your Zoom calls, and the team have been amazing, you know, there's a lot of fun, a lot of smiling faces that come, but you can just feel sometimes that energy isn't there, and it's very difficult to charge it up via a Zoom call or a Microsoft Teams call. So I kind of miss that. And you're right, I miss meeting the clients, like missing out, going out for a drink or taking out for lunch or whatever it is. That physical interaction with people, it's not as easy.
Where do you see the next 5 years going for both you and for the business?
I mean, I think the business will continue to sort of do what we're doing. I mean, my focus now, I sort of stepped away a lot from the client work to focus on the marketing side of the business and training the other guys. So the idea is it's kind of this exponential growth. So I could spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week seeing clients, or I could spend no time seeing clients, but spend 24 hours a day on marketing my business or training my advisors. And obviously if I can train 5 advisors and I can spend money on the marketing, then there's going to be a potential and an exponential growth that I couldn't have achieved by going flat out. So that's the decision we made. So I've been spending a lot of time upskilling on marketing, working out what it looks like, how to do it, a lot on sort of this sort of podcasting, interviews, writing, that sort of stuff, which I'm enjoying, and networking on a business perspective. So I will continue to do that.
How are you finding the marketing perspective? Because I've, with Sales Change, it's been a learning curve for me. I built my own website, which is clunky, but it's there. I'm doing the podcast. I run my own social media channels and trying to find the right voice, if that makes sense, to portray. I mean, you've clearly done it with the messaging and the branding that you've had for First Wealth already. But how are you finding delivering that in a marketing way?
I guess I set about building a team of people who will help me with this stuff. So I feel fortunate. So we work at St. James's Studio. I don't know if you know Will and Joe. So we work with those guys. They do all our social media. We're just doing some work with Insightful UX as well, who are based in Poole, who are helping us with wireframes for new website, content, tone of voice, etc. Podcast Labs have been helping with some of the editing on this, on what we've been doing as well. So, and I've got a guy, Joe Binder, who helps me with my LinkedIn posts as well. So we've got an amazing team of people who kind of all know each other and build it. So my role is really to talk about what's on my mind and what we're trying to do within the, and almost like journal what we're doing in the business and what we're trying to do. And then those guys help bring the whole thing to life. So, and very much now a focus on the evidence of the marketing. So, right, what are we doing? Where are we spending our money? What's clicking through? What's Facebook ads or, you know, LinkedIn ads? What's working? What's not working? And very much a micro-driven approach to marketing in a way that we would have never even thought about 12 months ago. It's kind of the scattergun approach, just throw money at everything and hope for the best. Whereas this is, right, let's test what's working, what's not, and then we can get much cuter at it. So it's evolved completely in the last 6 to 12 months.
Are you enjoying that process?
I love it. Again, it's...
It's a second calling.
It's a new skill, right? So yeah. I've been an advisor since I was 21 years old. So that's great. I'm now 45. I've done 25 years of that. I'm pretty good at being an advisor. But you get to the stage where you get bored of yourself. So, right, it was kind of I want to learn some new stuff. I need to create more things in my brain to get to learn and understand. So this marketing bit, I've always had an interest in it. I like creativity. I like doing things a bit differently. So it was an easy thing to me to say, right, I'm going to do the marketing. But realize my own limitations and then find people who I can go, right, I now know enough to ask the questions that if you know the answers, you're going to be impressed with you. Whereas before, so anyone could have told me anything and I would have just gone, oh, that sounds really good. And I think I probably made a lot of bad decisions in the past because I didn't know enough and I didn't know the right questions to ask. But I think I'm getting there now.
Yeah, yeah. And where do you see, this is probably the most boring question on the podcast, but where do you see the markets going? How do you see the recovery?
I'll give you, they will go up in the long run. As they always do. In the short term, I have no idea. I mean, and that's a very honest answer. Everything that we do is about evidence-based academic research on markets. So stock market, global equities, over the long term will always add value. So if you buy and hold, you'll win. If you try to trade, you might win, you might lose. So we're very, very simple in our approach to go, right, this is the way to do it. Buy a global basket of equities and bonds. Make sure that you're adjusted for the longer term, medium term, and then just don't do anything. Keep your costs down. Don't try to trade. Don't try to do anything clever, and you will win. But in the short term, what happens tomorrow or 6 months or 12 months, I have no idea. I wouldn't want to guess.
That's honest, at least.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll go further than that anyone that does want to guess is making it up as they go along, because no one has any idea about what's going to happen in the short term.
It's very true. It's very true. So what we do on every single podcast, Anthony, is we ask the same five questions at the end. And I'm going to ask the exact same five to you. So the first question is, what would be the worst job you could ever do and why?
Well, this is a good question. So I've decided that my worst job that it could be is I'm going to be a foot guard in the Queen's Guards, with one of those persons that stands outside Buckingham Palace or with one of those black bear hats on, not talking and looking straight ahead in the sweltering heat. So that's probably my worst job. And the reason is that I am someone who likes to talk, as you probably guessed. I'm very impatient. So someone was taking photos of and waving things in my face, I'd probably get very upset by that. And I'd probably just get really hot and bothered with that massive hat on. So I think that would probably be something that I could stand for probably less than 5 minutes.
Good answer. That's a good answer. What did you want to be when you grew up?
I would probably say that a lot of young lads growing up, probably a professional footballer. I was a mad Liverpool supporter when I was a kid. So people like Ian Rush and Kenny Dalglish were my sort of heroes. So yeah, I would have been probably a sort of Graham Souness type sort of hard tackling midfielder, winning loads of sort of championships. And back in the 1980s, that would have been my dream career.
So do you still play now?
I don't play football anymore. No, I just sort of don't like injuries. So I sort of gave up football and rugby. I do things on my own now, like running and cycling and swimming, where I hopefully don't get injured as much as I used to.
I've just discovered the beauty of cycling. And that was mainly because Joe and Will at St. James Studio, mutual friends, have completed this charity challenge over the last couple of months, weeks.
That's right.
And Joe inspired me to go out, get a bike and start cycling. So for the last 2 weeks, I've cycled every single day to work and cycled back again. And it's about 20K a day. So I'm just starting to, I've had to buy a new saddle because the saddle that I had was very uncomfortable. But I'm just starting to relish the opportunity to get on a bike in the morning and cycle.
It's very liberating. It's one of those things that you get better at it, you get stronger, you get fitter and you lose weight. And as you get stronger and fitter and lose weight, you go faster and then you want to go faster. And then the whole thing's sort of compelling. So yeah, if you ride on your own, it's great. But if you get a group of mates out there, the speed, the additional speed of going with a group is a buzz. You go out for lunch somewhere. It is a great thing to be doing. So good for you.
It is addictive. It is addictive. Which leader do you look up to the most?
This is a great question. So I'm going to go for Jacinda Ardern, who's the New Zealand Prime Minister. Female Prime Minister of New Zealand. She's 40 years old. She's sort of breaking molds. She's very authentic. She's very, the way she deals with people, she's got an amazing sort of compassion about what's been going on around the gun laws, around COVID-19. She's got this real natural empathy, the way she communicates on social media. And I think she is a role model for what proper people who represent their country should look like going forward. So I think she is head and shoulders the lead politician in the world at the moment. So I'm going to make her my most admired leader because I think she's pretty inspirational.
And she's completely polar opposite to the, I don't know how best to describe him, but the leader of the United States.
Correct, exactly. I think what you said earlier, what's going to change? I mean, politics and distribution of wealth and wealth creativity is going to have to change over the next few years. So capitalism, in my view, isn't broken, but the distribution of capitalism has been broken for a long time. Too many people are too wealthy and too many people are too poor, and it doesn't work. So it's been the politicians that are socialists to go, right, it's about working with capitalism to generate and create wealth and to distribute it properly is the future. It's not just about going, I'm a socialist that just deploys capital and hate capitalism. That's not going to be how you solve these things. So politicians who think differently about these issues are going to need to be found to solve the significant issues we're going to have after this crisis.
I genuinely think that we're moving towards that way with Jeremy Corbyn was a left Labour leader, but you've got the people like Bernie Sanders in the United States who want to do things differently in order to benefit society rather than generate lots of capital, like you say, for the top 1-2% and leave the bottom 5-10%.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's just the way they do it.
Absolutely. It's all about, and that's right. So it's not about extreme capitalism. It's not about extreme socialism. It's something in the middle. It's like a sort of hybrid version that understands that a lot of the companies that have made a lot of money have done so off government grants, government initiatives to say, can we have like a joint, sort of a joint system that says, right, almost like a shared equity system, right? Government will put money into something. It will work alongside the best capitalists in the world, but the rewards will then be shared from an equity component, which will then be designed to redistribute wealth to the nation. So there, it depends how you look at it. There is some amazing opportunities, and it's going to change the political outlook, will change hopefully over the next 5 years to 10 years, but in a way that could benefit everyone, which has got to be it's an exciting thing to think about.
Yeah, it's got to be. The next question is Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn? Which is your preferred social network?
LinkedIn, that's an easy one for me. So I'm not really on Instagram, or I've never been on Facebook. I have a Twitter account, which just seems to be loads of financial advisors criticizing everyone, which is a bit boring. So LinkedIn, I say Joe helps me with my personal profile, but proper conversations about real important business things, LinkedIn by head and shoulders of those things for me.
And what was the last book that you read, Anthony?
So I've just read a book called Will It Make the Boats Go Faster by Bent Hunt Davis, yes. Who was on my podcast. So he was an Olympic gold medalist in the Sydney 2000 Olympics. So it's about his business. He works with entrepreneurs about unblocking things, about personal belief statements. How do you get your team to go with you? How do you back yourself? And it's about sort of his experience as a rower and that sort of self-doubt that he had and how hard he pushed himself and getting to the stage where he was on the podium to win the gold medal. So I read that book as part of my process to find out a bit more about him. But yeah, it's a pretty inspirational book and inspirational book. Story. Really, really cool.
And I use that phrase every single day at work. In my main job, I always say to the team, in any team, there's always squirrels, there's always... Squirrels? Is that a word?
It could be. Yeah, squirrel. It's a combination of a quarrel and a quarrel.
We're leaving this bit in. But there is always squabbles. That's the word that I was looking for.
That's squabble. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and a lot of this doesn't make the boat go faster. We don't get from point A to B because this template doesn't work or this process doesn't work. To bring the team back to the common direction is. Or will it make the boat go faster? And that's how you get from point A to B. That's how we got the boat from point A to point B in the fastest possible time.
Absolutely. And again, I think it's that sort of shared vision and a lot about, you know, what is it that makes you as an individual tick? And why are we doing this stuff? What's in it for me? I'm a massive sports person anyway. So that sort of stuff inspires me.
Thanks for coming on the podcast, Anthony.
No, it's been great, Matt. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Whoa. Don't go anywhere yet. Julio, tell people where they can get more information.
If you like the podcast, go visit saleschange.co.uk.
That's good, but you said .do.
Saleschange.co.uk. Why don't you head... No. It's bad. It's bad. Go to saleschange.co.uk and... saleschange.co.uk and subscribe to our incredible newsletter. Thanks for listening.